Here?
Here.
Okay. Now's the time for public comment. If anybody has anything that they'd like to address the committee on, within the committee's purview that is not on the agenda, now's the time.
Oh, well, I was going to request that you would allow me to speak on item H a little early. The reason being is that we have a boat parade committee meeting at 7 o'clock, and we'd like to be there on time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Staff, are you ready to address that item?
Sure.
This is the item H is development standards for the CN and CP zones. This is a continued discussion review of the property development standards for these commercial zones, including minimum setbacks and maximum building height.
So, if I may,
staff presentation first,
okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, this is just a follow-up on our continuing discussion about the property development standards for these two commercial zones. I believe we were talking about the building setbacks and basically the requirements for developing the site. And I think it was an outgrowth of what we were talking about for doing any future mixed use or housing and that sort of thing to comply with the housing element goals and objectives. So in a nutshell, that's pretty much where we are at this point in time. We haven't done anything more than that.
Your attachments include the codes as they read today. So there's an attachment. It's section 23-7.5. Property development standards CN zone, and the second page of that would be property development standards CP zone.
So those are the two commercial zones that we currently have in the city, which is basically here and nowhere else in the city.
The first page is CN, the second page is CP.
Oh, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
There's extra agendas up here if anyone's interested. So that was a discussion we have. We don't have a specific recommendation with that regards at this point, but that was a discussion that we had on you, and we wanted to bring the codes, what they are here,
okay,
move forward on that discussion or continue discussion or finish the discussion, whatever.
Okay. Well, the reason this was brought up with, we asked staff to look into this, is that when we initially rezoned this area, City Hall and the library and the commercial building down at the end of the street or down at the end of the alley, there was concern expressed by the residents on Bishop that their view should not be impacted any more than the it's impacted by the existing office building down the end. That they were concerned that, wait, if you put mixed use and you go up too high, too close to the fence, we're going to be looking at this monolith in our backyard.
So for clarification, the CP zone would be this building, the library, and the office building next to us.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for the city. Then okay. Then the CN zone would be the rest of the town center.
The balance of the shopping center, yes.
Okay.
So just to put it in perspective and context.
Okay. So, we asked staff to look into that, and I guess no progress has been made on that.
Well, I think what we're going to do is we're going to talk, here are the codes as they are. And if you look at them, the pretty much got a 20-foot setback?
Mm-hmm.
A 20-foot setback.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a 20-foot setback all the way around front, side, and rear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do recall a brief discussion we had about developing some design guidelines so that we don't, should development occur in the shopping center, that we don't have a building that is a monolith, basically. That there's some design features in there that provide some relief architecturally so that, again, you're not looking at a blank wall, per se.
So I think timeliness is this because the foundation is also looking at the...
Well, that's the reason I wanted to give my input. If it's appropriate to give it at this point.
Okay, sure.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay. So as both council members are aware, the Villa Park Community Services Foundation has earmarked $65,000 of its funds towards the development of a community center. And we've engaged an architect who's doing it on a pro bono basis to work with the city engineer and city staff to take an initial look at some of the alternatives we have. One of the things that we're taking a very serious look at is developing partially over the current structure that we have here, as well as out into the parking lot area to maximize the amount of space that we can take advantage of. The other idea too is we have some parking that we could perhaps gain underneath the structure if we were to build it up and over the parking area. So rather than paint ourselves into a box by perhaps addressing the CP zone right now, I'd like council or this committee, if you would, to just put that in abeyance until you have an opportunity to have the architect work with the city engineer and staff to see what we're really looking at, what our possibilities are. And then we can also address some of the architectural, you know, concerns you would have, or perhaps people on Bishop would have. But right now, it's just a big unknown. So I think if we make any decisions now, we don't really know what we're working with. So need that. And I need your support in general to make this whole project work. So maybe now is a good time to at least, not maybe ask for it, but to at least put that out there, that we're hoping that you're going to be a big part of this project, because it's going to take everybody in the community to make it work and to handle all the various concerns and different groups that are going to want a piece of this and also be serviced by it. So if you wouldn't mind, I'd like you just to put that aside for right now, and we can all work with the architect and the city engineer to come up with a plan that's going to work for everybody. And that's really what I got to say.
Well, the commitment we made to the, when we were at least certain of us council members made, you know, getting their support for the rezoning, was that we would look and see how we can avoid impacting them by any future development. So yeah, it's something we don't have to deal with today.
Right.
Actually, this can has been kicked down the road since, for about a year now, or over a year. So, but at some point we will need to look at it. And, please, with the agreement of the other member of the committee, I would encourage you to direct the architect to find ways to design this building, you know, his proposed building, so that it does not impact the adjacent residents.
We're going to do everything we can to kind of keep as many members in the community on board with this, and to service as wide a group of people in the community as we can. And like I had mentioned to Vince earlier when I first got here, we're going to expect and need your input and support from day one. So,
yeah, and just to kind of speak for myself a little bit on this one, I think it's important for a city of any significant size, and certainly a Villa Park, to have a community center, whether it's serving young or old or in between various different groups, whether it's AA or, you know, different functions within the community. It helps bring the community together.
Exactly.
Certainly, I want to not only offer assistance, but then my support, obviously, after the project's been reviewed and hopefully during the project, and be a part of the solution as opposed to any sort of obstacle. And obviously, I've got a lot of ideas as far as which direction I think we should go, and we've got to be careful about our treasury, of course. But I think we've got a lot of private sector support that we can get. We've got the foundation, which is stepping up to the plate in a huge way, giving us seed money. We have an architect that's stepping up to the plate in a huge way. But I think the private sector is where it's going to be at. We've got some folks that are extremely generous that live within this community that would probably like to have their name affiliated with such a center. And whatever I can do to help make that possible, not only do I want assistance, I want support. But I do hear what you're saying, and I hear what Mayor Pro Tem Colacott is saying.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Just making sure we're taping that, right?
Yeah, we're. I believe we're taping it. It's
okay, that's,
yeah.
That's fine.
Okay.
Is it being taped?
Yes. Yeah. The tape is right in front of them.
Yeah, it's running.
Yeah. I'm having a hard time hearing. Maybe is there a mic or something?
I don't have a mic with me right now, no.
Okay, but could you speak up, please, because I'm having a lot of time hearing, so.
Okay.
Who?
I'm having a hard time hearing.
Right.
Here.
Which?
I can't hear you guys.
Oh, you can't hear us? Okay.
No problem. I can hear Ed. I heard Ed.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. With we'll now return back to the regular agenda.
While you're on building things, could you address I on the down back road already?
No, we'll go back to the original agenda.
Well, I know that, you know, heaven forbid you go out of your way because I have some place to be also, but you're already talking about building and building.
That was a special deal for.
You made it clear on your last city council meeting that the rules really don't matter when you appointed the person to the finance committee. So
okay, I think you're out of order.
I would ask if you would please address number nine.
Okay. Is there any other public comment on
yes,
items that are not
comment.
On the agenda?
I have a public comment.
City Manager, I believe that the Brown Act prohibits other council members from speaking at council meetings or at committee meetings that they're not members of.
I think we need to be very careful in regards to the speaking, and I think the city attorney's issued a memo to that effect. So if she wants to talk about the weather or she wants to talk about the Spartan football team, that's probably appropriate. But if she wants to talk about an agenda item, I think we need to be very, very cautious. I think that would be the gist of the advice.
That's exactly my understanding of what the city attorney said, to avoid any...
Can I speak?
Any when I'm
no,
done,
no, you may not.
I don't need a lesson in the Brown Act.
Well, apparently you do.
When
is that an accusation, Councilman?
No, that's a statement of fact.
Okay, sir. I would like to speak at public comment. It's public comment
I'm
time.
I'm sorry,
thank
but I cannot
much.
Recognize you because it would be a violation of the Brown Act.
Okay, what?
Please sit.
My name is Deanna Fascinelli. I'm a resident at 10901.
Pardon? I'll turn off. Okay, it's, let's see, now 6:45, and I'm calling the meeting of the Community Development and Public Safety Committee back to order. We adjourned as one of our councilmen was, in our view, violating the Brown Act, and we needed to adjourn to confer with our city attorney. The city attorney forwarded a letter stating that councilmen cannot speak at other committee members that they are not a member of. And he reaffirmed that position, so we cannot have receive additional or public comment or comment from a third city council member, as that would be a violation of the Brown Act. So we'll proceed with new business or approval of the minutes from the August 14th, 2017 meeting.
I got public comment, though.
Oh, you have another public comment? Okay.
Yeah. The city has public parking out in front, and I find it very funny that when we come by here for the city for take care of business stuff, we find that when you go on vacation, Mr. Collicott, you like to park your personal vehicle in the back, in the fenced-in area, as your personal parking structure. And it's like a strange use of public, the public forum or the public property. So I don't know why you find it necessary when you go on vacation that you want to park your car here, but I think it's a bad use of the parking things that's, really reserved for the police officer and, close enough to the gate so police officers can come and go and park their patrol units there.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay. We'll now move on to approval of the minutes from the August 14th, 2017 meeting.
Have any issues?
Pardon?
I don't have any issues.
Okay. Councilman Rossini has no issues, and I have, I'm comfortable with the summary, so we'll consider them approved. Okay. Next item is item four, new business. First item is sober living homes. Continued discussion of potential actions relative to sober living homes, and this continued from our last meeting. just a point of information, I attended the ACCOC Sober Living Task Force this afternoon down at Dana Point. They're proceeding with further development of that task force, which our city has took action at the last council meeting to participate in. The key items that were discussed, I think, at today's meeting were clarification on the types of what are the types of facilities that we're trying to address. One being sober living homes, which are do not provide treatment, and state permitted facilities that do provide treatment. The other thing that we discussed was kind of a consistent with our strategic planning that the city is doing, which is to identify what is our vision for what this coalition would try to address. And certainly the overall overarching objective is to get more local control over sober living homes and treatment facilities that are located in residential areas. What we discussed were what are some of the parameters, some of the goals that we'd be looking at for that. One is distances from sober living facilities, so that any neighborhood or any city would not be overburdened with a concentration of sober living facilities. Currently, that we do not have the authority to do that, and of course that would be one of the objectives of this effort, is to work with federal and state authorities groups to try to get that authority. Others might be to get the authority to do code enforcement inspections of such facilities and also participate in permitting. So we decide those are like the fundamental objectives or goals that we'd be looking for in this effort, which is a multi-city, multi-county, even a multi-state initiative that is being spearheaded by the ACCOC. So are there any other comments on the sober living?
Am I allowed to ask a question?
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
How many do we have right now? Can you speak up? How many do we have right now? How many sober living facilities?
City manager, could you correct me? I believe we have, we don't have any sober living facilities. We have two treatment facilities. They actually provide treatment. And that's kind of a higher level of facility. It's permitted by the state. But on both issues, where federal and state law really hamstrings our ability to really regulate those types of facilities. And that's what we're trying to do through the participation in the ACCOC coalition, is see how can we get more local control over that so we can, you know, properly manage or more fully manage our communities. Okay. Any other comments?
No.
Okay, next item is to get additional information on annexation parameters.
I think we've gone through kind of and discussed this in detail. There was a presentation made in June. The requirements for annexation would be submitted to LAFCO. The process would be, it's in an unincorporated area at this time. It's anywhere from 6 to 9 months, and there's a vote of landowners required. We have not spent any significant time since then, so it's a more matter of we received sort of a negative reception from the water district.
Mm-hmm.
They're the single landowner. Mm-hmm. Although I could think, but technically there may be another parcel in there but it's a minority landowner in Spaceway. Anyway, long story short, they were using the property for a large portion of it for mitigation efforts, and so they were not interested. It's a very significant asset for them, so they were very concerned about any sort of annexation or use. We have also, just out of note, received a similar but unofficial negative reception from the City of Orange staff, but that was just sort of on a staff level. It was nothing official, and the council has not taken action, nor we have approached them in a formal way. So given those two things, and I have not pursued this further with LAFCO, nor the city, nor the water district. So if it's kind of up to the, what you guys want to do with it. It's not on the city council, so in lieu of spending a lot of significant time on it, writing up any proposals, I have not done that at this point. So I'm sort of, it's on the agenda if you want to do something with it or direct it go to full council, or we let it, you know, sort of lay out and
okay. Just a question. You mentioned you've spoken with, at least had preliminary discussions with the City of Orange. Did they express any long-term interest in acquiring that property, or particularly that parcel that's adjacent to Villa Park?
They were very non-committal. All they spoke about is our potentially what the City of Villa Park might do. They were just very, very not the and I don't want to paraphrasing that they didn't think it was likely that would happen. Probably shorter words than those, but that's what basically they said.
Okay. Do you have any other comments?
No.
Okay. Well,
which chunk of land are you talking about?
It's the peninsula, basically, that's off of Collins. Is that, and it goes north and west of that,
Prospect.
Or east of that.
Prospect and Collins. Then.
Prospect and Collins, yeah.
Well, right where Collins turns into Prospect.
Yes, yep. Yes. Right. Right, if you go off to the, as you first drive and it starts to bend, there's an entry point there. And if you'll see on the map here, I can probably show it to you best.
How much property is that, Steve, up there?
About 35 and a half acres.
33 to 35 acres, somewhere in that range. But basically, there's the intersection I was just talking about. That would be Collins turning into Prospect. It's up through here. So basically, the water district, property I spoke about, the unincorporated, technically I think that school may be in that unincorporated area as well. That may not be owned by the water district. We haven't done a title search.
So you're not just talking about the little peninsula that's sticking out there. You're talking about the entire reservoir area that goes up to and across.
Well, it is a complete parcel. So LAFCO has instructed us that they do not see a need to do partial annexations. So they don't have any real interest in processing that. That's a policy call. LAFCO could certainly change that policy. But at this point, they've indicated to us that if we were to annex the unincorporated area, which is now unincorporated, that would be all inclusive.
And how many wells are located on that, you know?
I haven't explored it too much, but the Water District did say that it's a very important asset for them and one that they weren't willing to change use of, period. The peninsula property itself, that land mass that you see that kind of sticks into, protrudes out, that's what they're using as mitigation. So under their environmental documentation, they're required to do some mitigation. So they were dedicating that land toward mitigation efforts.
For wildlife or whatever.
For whatever mitigation they have to do under CEQA and all the respective acts. So they aren't really interested in seeing it ever be used for anything else. And that's where we sort of left it. I haven't pursued it to the nth degree. Basically given some of the responses we received.
And just okay. As a general rule or generality, how much money would it take to for the city to spend in order to annex that ballpark? Are we talking
there would
million,
be,
3 million?
No,
million?
It would be, it wouldn't be ownership. Annexation is different from ownership. Annexation involves a change of governance. So it would go from the county board of supervisors to the city of whichever. Right now it's under the sphere of influence of the City of Orange. So if City of Orange were to annex it, it just simply means they take responsibility for on-site law enforcement, fire, whatever the service and utility requirements would be, or development rights, et cetera. So
yeah, the goal is not development, the goal is rezoning. That's it.
So there is the price tag, if you were to say a price tag today, I would say the filing fees with LAFCO, which are several hundred thousand, and the process of public hearing and staff time that would be associated with that. But it's not a purchase transaction.
You're not buying it.
But you're not buying control of it.
But
what you're doing
cost
is
associated with
you're
it.
Buying you are taking control of the zoning capabilities of it. So the governance of that property.
And what would be our purpose for taking it to rezone it as what?
There's initially, what we were looking at is perhaps taking the 0.8 acres that is currently identified for high-density zoning and moving it outside of what are the current city limits. And that was the only area outside of our existing city limits. Oftentimes you see where, you know, other cities have dealt with their high-density zoning by, you know, putting their the high-density zoning someplace, you know, at the fringe of their city limits or whatever to reduce the impact on their communities. And this is the only parcel that's adjacent to our city that is not, that is currently unincorporated.
What about the gigantic parcel over on the corner of Santiago and Meats? That's the it's some sort of, they run some business out of
the nursery.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's currently within our city limits.
So why would we want to take this piece of property under a wing, which would have all sorts of other, I can just imagine, impact and environmental impact when you have a nice big flat area?
Well, you don't, the state requirements are not that you build, just that you have a parcel zoned for.
Why don't you just rezone that parcel over there? It's big, flat, and it's on the very outskirts of Villa Park.
Well, the objective of zoning the city hall for mixed use to meet our high density requirement was that we own this parcel. You know, it's a government owned piece of property, and we have no intention of allowing, you know, or doing a high density development here. In fact, now we're talking about doing a community center here. Similarly, with this parcel over here, that's owned by the Orange County Water District, and again, they have no interest in doing anything with that. So it'd be zoned, never be developed. But it'd check off the box for the for us meeting our high density zoning requirement for the state.
But hasn't the state in, say, what was it, Huntington Beach, they forced them to develop their high density and low income area?
I'm not familiar with what they did in Huntington Beach. But the advice
that was just in the news, I think maybe a month ago, that they were forced to develop it. So if you're going to have an area that you, it kind of strikes, kind of flies in the face of the whole concept that if you're going to pick a piece of parcel that you have no intention to develop, and you put that on the record like you do now, that effectively you are not doing that.
That's kind of what we did in putting the in these reaffirming our zoning here at the last council meeting. And
well, this area could always be developed up until you redesignated as something
could.
Else.
It could, but I don't see this city council doing that. I'm not sure that any future city council would do that either. So that was the objective, is to put the zoning in an area that was under government control, that would likely not be developed for high density zoning. And if ever a project was developed, since we own the property, we could control the manner in which it's developed as high density housing. So, you know, conceivably, we could, if we were forced to do a project, develop high-density housing on this mixed-use parcel, we could say, okay, it's high-density, but we want to have larger units and more high-end units that are more consistent with the nature of Villa Park. Now, if you put it on a private parcel, and it's zoned for high density, they can build whatever project they want as long as it's a conforming land use. And we've got no control over that.
Well, and this kind of ties in, but I won't get into it. In I, you have all these new requirements for houses and stuff like that, which I'm sure you're going to get into. With regard to that piece of property, which is the nursery over in the back, why couldn't you put the same type of restrictions you're looking to put on as far as large single-family story housing in the rest of the state and the rest of the city, where you could put that area where the nursery is label that high density and put the restrictions on it that units have to be this size, no smaller than that, no bigger than this. You could do that, couldn't you?
It would have to meet the state mandates for what constitutes high density. So it means that I think their requirement, Ray, can you correct me, is that it has to be 20 units per acre.
It's 20 to 22 dwelling units per acre. And if I might add, the properties that you're speaking about, sir, we did explore that, and there are physical constraints because part of the property is under Edison easements, and there are drip lines, setback requirements that you need to maintain. So it, if I remember correctly, the analysis that we had done didn't yield the 20 to 22 dwelling units per acre because of it.
How many acres is over there?
I can't recall right off my head.
More than two?
Gosh, maybe.
I would think two to three.
How many acres here?
Here, I think we've got 0.8 acres.
0.8.
Yeah.
Okay, so if this was going to meet your requirements for high-density housing, that would definitely meet your requirements for high-density housing.
But I think the argument is potentially less control because that's owned by a private entity. This is owned by a governmental.
Yeah.
I understand your point.
Is this private?
That is part of it. Yes, that's part of it.
That's private, right?
Correct. Yes. Part of it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
But I appreciate your point.
Okay.
So, to clarify,
yeah, I think we've got enough the information that we were looking for, so we're good on that. Thank you.
Is there a recommendation being made off this discussion?
No, just receive and file. Okay, item number 4C, 10451 Wolf Avenue, adjustment to rear yard setback.
Just provide an update on that. When we last met about this address, it was for a single-family detached, a second unit that's detached from the main residence, and it came before this committee. The property owner was requesting an adjustment to the rear yard setback. This committee did not support the request, and also from that discussion had required or requested that the property owner perform a survey of the property to ascertain the location of the rear property line, which the property owner did. Not only did he, the licensed surveyor, locate the rear property line, but also the side and front property lines. Mm-hmm. It's just part of the whole package when a surveyor does that type of work. And so they did determine from that survey, it did determine that it was less than the 10-foot minimum setback requirement for the rear, not only for the rear, but also from the side. They were a couple of inches off. So it is the property owner's intention to comply with the code. So city staff has been working with the property owner and the property owner's architect to make necessary adjustments to the building so that it does measure 10 feet as measured from the face of the building to the property line, both rear and side.
Okay.
So that's the update on that.
So that sounds like good news that we're looking
so
forward
with. So
the
variance, not going to proceed with the variance is bottom line. So that previously was discussed.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Any other comments on that?
No.
Okay. Verizon Wireless, item D.
Could we do D, E, and F at the same time? Because
certainly.
Essentially they're the same three items. And
you know what, real quick, I'm sorry, back on C, yeah. Just to confirm, we've had no further construction on that site?
That's correct.
Okay,
great. That's correct.
Just one, because I know that was a major concern.
Yeah, everything's
that
been
even
suspended.
After we had discussed.
And the architect has submitted some drawings that would comply.
Okay.
And he has yet to finalize those with the owner, so I don't want to speak out of turn what's going to be pursued.
Okay.
Okay. So D, E, and F, Bryanston Wireless.
So for those three items, D and E is handled by another vendor that Verizon is working with. I've reached out to the applicant for these two items, and I have not gotten a response as far as whether or not they want to go ahead and pursue these microcells at these locations.
This is E and F?
This is for D and E.
D and E, I'm sorry.
I believe that is the Coastal Business Group. That's one of the two vendors that Verizon Wireless is working with.
I did see one gentleman here, but you're with Verizon itself, correct?
Or no, with, I'm with the vendor as well.
Okay, which vendor are you with, sir?
Latin Beach. I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for clarifying that.
Mr. Anthony Serpa is with Black & Veatch, and he's in attendance this evening. I don't believe he has any updated information, but he could provide whatever information he does have.
Do you have any information or anything you'd like to share with us?
D&E? You're on deaf now?
We're all right, taking all three of them.
There's no real action recommended for D&E. It was an update, so...
It was just an update.
If you want to deal with an update on F, go ahead.
Okay. Anthony Serpa, representing Verizon Wireless. I just wanted to ask for a continuance to the next meeting. I'm working with staff on getting the extra information that you've requested about the SoCal and our other studies in the area. I just wanted to come tonight to ask for more time.
Okay, thank you.
Best course.
Yeah, I think it's good course. Okay. Okay, item G, development standards and design guidelines for new second-story residential construction projects.
So what staff has prepared is some development standards, and these are proposed. These are in draft form only. And so it's development standards and design guidelines for the construction of second-stories addition onto existing residence or at initial construction. And what this design, the development standards and design guidelines basically is to, it's to articulate second story units or second story additions to homes, whereby on the second story, rather than having a box second story, if you will, next to, especially in the R1 zone where the setback are a little bit more restrictive. These guidelines are meant to be a little bit more sensitive in terms of architectural treatments to the second story. It's not meant to be more restrictive, but more sensitive to design all the way around, front, sides, rear. And so these, again, this is the first swing at it from staff's point of view, and we've used a couple of development standards and design guidelines that are currently used by other cities. Between Bill and I, we were able to gather up a couple of development standards and design guidelines from other cities that work. And again, to be sensitive to the architectural design and theme that would go on the second story of a home, basically.
Mm-hmm. And these are from municipalities, correct? These are not from HOAs or anything like that?
Correct.
Because that's not something we want to do at all.
Right.
Thank you.
Can you describe some of the particulars as to those design features that are not going to be restrictive, but might be a little more sensitive?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part.
Could you review what your proposal is?
Yeah. Sure. These are things that some of the things that we would ask an architect or developer to look at when they're designing a second story or a second story addition or at initial construction when someone's building a new home that has a second story. So some of the things that are listed that we would like for them to look at is building mass, building elevation treatments, roof forms, window placement, the integration of a second story to the existing, again, being sensitive to the architectural style of the existing house. You don't want to make it look like it was different from, you know, the architecture of the first floor.
We'll have a public opportunity for public comment and questions in a few minutes. Let's finish with the staff presentation.
Excuse me, you're reading from something. I'm just trying to find the attachment.
It is, if you look at, it's a chart says proposed property development standards for second-story additions and two-story residence initial construction. It's got half red, a half black on the grids. It talks about E4 zones and R1 zones.
That's a matrix.
Matrix type of thing.
I don't have that.
It should be. It's an attachment here.
Sorry.
Sorry,
we're trying to find a copy.
Right.
Yeah,
okay. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Right, it's this page right here.
Okay.
Yes, we're going to have that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see it in here.
Okay.
And that's.
So, could you describe it in a little more detail? So, I think most of us are pretty cold to what you're proposing, and.
It's just not showing you the actual black.
I'm going to make it in.
Yeah. Elizabeth, I've got a copy here.
It's in there. It's unfortunate it doesn't show red because of the copy. You're just copying black and white. My apologies. I didn't realize on the copies.
Can I ask what communities you looked at?
I looked at the city of Costa Mesa, and then Bill Tarrin, who is our deputy chief building official, pulled some standards from the city of Arcadia.
Okay, so in the beginning here, you've got the side yard setback item 6 here, and then the black is what our current requirement is?
Yeah.
Well, the first column one, because it'll copy it all black to everybody. The first column would be under E4 zones, the current requirements, and then you would look under the second column would be what Ray was suggesting might be a change.
Okay, and the change would apply to only where you've got where a property owner is proposing to add a second story.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I missed that last piece. I didn't
hear that. The second column would only apply where a project proponent wants to add a second story to their property.
Wouldn't that mean you have to chop out part of the house? Because if I have a single story house right now, right?
Uh-huh.
And it meets the setback of not less than 10 feet setback, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to add a second story, I have to chop away 2 feet of my house in order to add that second story, because I have to make the setback no less than 12 feet.
Not chopping away the existing first floor,
second
but
floor.
Designing the second floor so that there's it's set back away from the edge of the first floor.
Okay, so the setback's only yes. applying to the second story.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So it wouldn't be a block wall of first and second, it'd
right.
be a step.
Like a box on top of a box.
I was going to make, I thought that you had said that it was for second story structures and for new development as well, right?
Yeah, so for initial construction, if it includes a second story, then the architect would need to consider designing the second floor so that it has the setback from the face of the first floor, if you will. That they're from the street, and then also from the next door neighbor, there's some relief from on this, because otherwise you would have, say for instance, this is the common property line wall, and if right now the code allows for the wall or for the wall of the house to go straight up, as opposed to what's being proposed here, it would go first floor and then it's set back, and then second. So that there's some visual relief, as opposed to having just a boxy structure along the side property line.
What I find interesting is all the second story homes right now that were originally built here in 69, 70, 71, 75, that period of time,
mm-hmm.
they all are of that design that you're now trying to avoid from. You're trying to take us away from what was originally here. So if somebody has a an original design house with a second story,
mm-hmm.
and they want to add, say, a little more room to it, they're going to have to change their entire makeup of that?
We would have to look at them from an individual or a case-by-case basis to see how this would apply.
So that's going to date a lot of the houses, because you can tell by what look like, so
mm-hmm.
that, and it would also decrease a lot of our variety. And what comes to mind is that house that's on Center right across from BPE. How could they possibly set back
that second story.
Well, I think we want to clarify here. What we were asked to was to deal with the block wall discussion, so we're presenting options. Where this is something that would have to go to the full council for approval and for discussion like that. This is one way to do it. Some cities do it. That's all we're telling you is some cities do it. It's not, you know, you don't have to do it. You can say the council says I don't want to do it. We want to leave it like it is. This is a policy decision. But in answer to the question, is there a way to deal with the block wall construction concept, this is what's being suggested is could a one way to deal with it an option. So I think what we're trying to stay away from, you can certainly, the council has, there's no mandate that you do anything. You can leave everything as is. But I think what we're trying to do is respond to the question was, is there any way to deal with this potentially from the neighbor's perspective?
It doesn't even have to involve setting back the second floor. I mean, you can articulate the face of the elevation of a building by window placements, articulating the roof lines and that sort of thing. You don't necessarily need to eliminate potential square footage that could be built on the second floor. It could be, again, articulated by architectural treatments and features.
You're just trying to get away from the square.
Yes, that's what the answer to this question is.
That's the
are there
objective.
Ways to get away from the squareness of some of these buildings? And what we're saying is this is a way to do it. It's not the only way, but it's the way that's being offered here as something that we're reporting back.
Well, I think really what we're trying to do is that whether it's square or not, you know, we're not a design review committee, but the idea is we do want to encourage people to enhance their properties, to do room additions and so forth, where they'll, you know, to enhance their properties. But we'd like to be sensitive to the adjacent property owner so that, you know, suddenly they don't have this huge, you know, two-story thing, you know, right in their face. So just to provide a little bit of relief. So we're trying to accommodate the need for or the interest of a lot of our residents to add onto their properties, but also make sure that in doing so that they're sensitive, the development is sensitive to the adjacent property owners as well.
My only comment, Councilman, would be that when taking this into consideration, which it has merit, that you may want to also look at different types of construction or design features some people might be doing. I see this and I say, oh yes, this would fit very well into a country type of setting or a country type of house, where not so much if you wanted to do something, say Tuscany or something like that. So just something to think about.
Yeah, it's in having worked with an architect recently, they're very creative about figuring out how to, you know, work within parameters as long as they know what the parameters are to make it look good. So, yes.
So I have a question.
I guess we're at public comment now.
I guess I'm confused. I'm obviously the newcomer, and I understand you mentioned kind of why this brought about because somebody was building a second story in the house to prevent the block wall. But isn't that what makes Villa Park the hidden jewel, is that we all are able to build or remodel to our own liking, and we're not, I understand it's not an HOA, but like my mother-in-law lives down in Newport, and she had to go through this mess because she wanted a certain thing, they had to go to the committee, and it was a total nightmare for her. And I think one of the allures of our community, and being that it is a sought-after community, is that we do have that freedom. So why are we doing this now? Haven't we survived well being able to design our homes how we want? And I'm sure that there is, you know, the common courtesy of your next door neighbor. But why do we need this?
I think because we've had incidences where we haven't had neighbors that were courteous to others, that have built boxes with balconies looking right in other people's bedrooms. And this isn't an effort to try to avoid that. You think your point is well taken by this committee and by this city, and that there should be freedom to design your house the way that you enjoy it within the parameters of the code. This is a minor adjustment to the code. This isn't to make it as restrictive as the cities of Newport Beach or Laguna Beach or anything crazy like that. With all due respect to our colleagues down there, they're very, very restrictive. and they make it very, very difficult and incredibly expensive to build. We have the good fortune of working with our residents. We want to continue to do that. But what we don't want to have is one really bad remodel after another really bad remodel, because it's the lowest common denominator, and have people come in and just flip and flip and flip. I mean, I think we've been very fortunate and blessed to have people that have invested in this community for the long term, whether they're an investor or whether they're a homeowner. We want to make sure that there's sufficient checks and balances so that the neighborhood feel is kept, and that we don't have one bad box after another one, so it looks almost homogenous, like an Irvine. We want to just make sure that we're staying up with design guidelines that other cities have adopted, and looking out and seeing if we need to tweak our code a little bit here or there, but not in any significant, meaningful way, correct me if I'm wrong, make this something different than what it was.
Well, the what staff is proposing is not really a design style, but more just the design parameters.
Right.
So that, yeah, we want to protect adjacent property owners from having windows looking, you know, at the new additional or structure addition, looking into their master bedroom window, or
I can appreciate that.
Yeah, and we're also trying to protect adjacent property owners from property owner's enthusiasm to just add a huge, you know, volume of square footage right in their face. We want to have a little bit of space so that we maintain our relaxed, you know, we all moved here because we want a little more space. We like the, you know, the half acre lot sizes and the more generous R1 lots that we have in the city. And we want to maintain that feel.
Let's say I'm wanting to add a second story. Would it be you guys that would then have to approve my plan?
It's got to go through.
It would go to planning and building.
Yeah.
To plan check.
And City Council doesn't review.
And it ends there?
Unless a variance is requested, significant variance from code. And these are guidelines, so there wouldn't be variances assigned to the guidelines. But if the event that. Right, am I correct?
That's correct.
If there were specific setback changes or something like that, there were variances, and it would come forward to the full council. So this is just, design guidelines are subjective, so that we would ask that those be considered.
I said, so yes, it ends there. It ends with
plan check review.
Plan check review.
Yeah. We don't have.
Yeah.
No, I just want to make sure. I just want to make sure you understand exactly where it ends. Okay, good.
Yeah, we have a rich variety of home styles and designs in our community, as we all know. And, you know, that's part of what makes Villa Park special, but it all works.
And as Steve mentioned, if there was any request to deviate from the code requirements, like the front yard setback or side yard or the building height, lot coverage, that sort of thing, then it would be a formal request that's presented to the Community Development and Public Safety Committee, correct? And then their task of making a recommendation either to approve, not approve, or taking no action whatsoever. And then it would be the applicant's prerogative whether to continue on to the city council, regardless of what the recommendation is. And so that's where that's basically, in a nutshell, what the process is.
I keep going back to the house on center, and it's all flat.
So
it's not to my taste, but it's a, my mom loves it. So one man's trash is another man's treasure.
So I think what we're suggesting here are we were asked to come back with some options, and we're, whatever this group, any change would have to go to the full council. Mm-hmm. So this is just, here's an idea. If you guys want us to tweak the ideas or change ideas or add new ideas, then we're all for it.
We could certainly bring it back to this committee with changes for folks to weigh in on it again as well prior to taking it up to city council.
Okay. I have one last question.
Yes.
Sorry. Is this like a complaint-driven issue, or have people brought it to the council saying, or to this, what is this?
My understanding is that it's a response to an addition that was made that had a blank wall. I haven't seen this particular addition myself, but I was told that it was
void of any design features that, you know, provided the adjacent property owner any relief.
There are like, what, 6,200 residents in Villa Park. One complaint, we want to rewrite the entire code for second stories. Is that what I'm getting?
Well, no, I don't think it's... I think the complaint raised the issue that we've got a have a hole in our planning or zoning requirements, and we're trying to make sure that we don't have that we provide guidance to new project proponents so that they don't create a similar problem.
Well, I understand that, and I was in favor of it up to a point when I asked. Do you have one more than one complaint? One complaint? Six complaints? 20? Because I just think it's kind of odd that you can find, out of 100 people, you can find someone to complain about the weather or whatever else. But you have 6,200 people who live here, and if you only get one complaint about somebody building a house somewhere just next to this one person, and you want to change the way everybody else, all the other parcels on this in the city are controlled if someone wants to add a second story, just because of one person and one person's dissatisfaction with their unreasonable neighbor.
I think it's a bit of hyperbole. I mean, I understand your point, but I think it's a bit of hyperbole to say it's just one neighbor. I mean, we hear folks come in here, and we've seen folks come before the council that have objected to this, objected to that, and have raised concerns, and this is an attempt to somewhat address obviously that one particular complaint, but as well as I think deal with some of the other issues, and also to make sure that we forecast for future issues, because not everybody plays by the same set of common decency and rules, and we'll go out of the way to try to subvert staff.
So yeah, it's it's not an issue did come up. And it made us aware that, oh, we've got, this is something we should probably address in our zoning requirements so that we can, you know, we don't have to address this ever in the future again. We've got, we've provided good guidance to future developers, so.
I always think that I look at California, and it seems like we always want to make laws of exception. You know, it's one, you have a law that works really good for 99% of the people, and one person wiggles out and they want to change and scrap the whole thing and make it very, very restrictive. And in this case, you have a bunch of people and you have, you know, one, I'm going to call it a verified complaint, because Councilman Rossini indicates that you may have had one complaint and all the rest are like people who come through council or whatever else. This, you have one verified complaint and you're looking to rewrite the future for everybody else who owns in Villa Park now. And I'm just saying that you may want to really look at the long-reaching aspects of this proposal. Nothing more. Not saying it's bad. I'm just saying you might want to look at the long-reaching effects.
Hmm? Howard, do you have a comment?
I do. I have a question, Richard. Or maybe it's a comment. Well, I'll do it, and then you tell me whether it was a question or comment.
Right? Okay.
Happy to do that. This is a pretty small audience on a pretty broad subject. And if I understand the process right, there'd be some discussion going on, maybe another meeting or two, and the two of you would come to some sense of recommendation, and you would take it to a city council, which public feels is not balanced, and three people would put a new series of regulations in place in the city. So my question or comment would be, what process are you going to put in place that would invite a lot of the city residents to come in and hear what this is about, and perhaps put up some examples of this is a building that would better fit our new guidelines? You kind of did that with the street situation at one point on a Saturday. You had a meeting and presentations. There was really good communication with the residents in the city. As much as you guys would like more people to participate in city government, it's not happening. We've got 6 people here, four of which probably are here because of the subject or something else. And a few more people might have to come to full city council. So they're not really living the evolution of these ideas. And I think you have a responsibility to get a broader base of the community involved in understanding the direction the city is going. So that would be my question or comment or whatever
okay.
it would be.
How about we call it a political opinion and a difference of opinion?
What
it's certainly a, can I finish?
It's no,
a, yeah, actually, he's got the floor.
Actually, I can't. I have the floor. It's a political opinion. It's the same political opinion we've heard from the same or similar group of folks for quite some time. And actually, this committee has seen more participation within the last 6 months than it's seen in the past. And with all due respect, sir, I have the floor. With all due respect, sir, I have the floor. I think that the fraction that you're seeing, or fracture that you're seeing within the council, is generated for political theater and for political gain. And it's not
you're
by
so
the majority.
Bullshit.
It's not by the majority. It's by the minority. And I hate to say it, but city councils have historically had different votes on different subjects. A majority of our votes. Hang on. Okay, you're interrupting.
You're out of order, Howard. Let him finish.
You're out of order. Okay, let me finish. And a majority of the votes we do vote 4-1 or 5-0. Okay, there are some unfortunate, contentious situations, politically motivated situations, where it's a 3-2.
Okay. Well, that's
true or not? What is true or not? The agenda doesn't call for discussion as to the evolution of the weight of the board and the opinions of the board and minorities and so forth. And I didn't make any comment along those lines other than to say that it would be well if you guys thought about engineering a broader understanding of a fairly big issue that you're presenting and get the involvement and participation of the residents of the city.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's a great idea
and
to have as many residents as possible. But it's the rest of the subject. It's not words put in your mouth. It's word
it
taken directly
okay,
from your
like
mouth.
To call this to order. Let's get back to the agenda item at hand. Okay, well, we have a recommendation from staff.
We have a proposal that was set forth. I think
proposal.
We were asked to identify that. It's if you want to make it the recommendation of it's sort of come back to you with an option, so we came back with an option. If this is one way to do it, again, if you want us to go back to drawing board, say come up with another way, we come back with another way. But we sort of need direction from you is where we're talking about, right?
Okay.
That's correct.
Well,
I don't want it to be seem like we evaluate all options and we're done and this is it. This is just an option we get presented. It's for consideration, deliberation, and all the fun we've had. Notwithstanding, it's up to you guys to decide what you want to do.
Okay. I'd like to propose that we bring this back to our next meeting. I think that Mr. Kirshner made a good suggestion. If we could have some drawings to show, you know, how this would work, you know, what the existing condition is and what the, you know, potential impacts on adjacent neighbors might be and what the proposal is and how this might alleviate some of those potential conflicts.
Sure.
And in the meantime, if you, if other residents have any other comments they'd like to make on the on this proposal, we'd welcome those. And certainly if staff can identify any other potential solutions, they'd be welcome.
Okay.
And so. One second. And if, obviously this is agendized and announced, but is there perhaps another vehicle on the city website to, you know, flash something out there that says, you know, hot topic, something along those lines? Another vehicle to, as Mr. Kirshner mentions, raise even more awareness besides the multiple meetings on this subject.
Yeah, I like the just a moment, Howard. Public comment session is over.
Crystal hasn't had a chance to talk.
Pardon?
This lady hasn't had a chance
yes,
to talk.
Yes, what are your comment?
I just wanted to ask, and maybe this is directed at you, I don't know, but and first off I want to say it's a really hard position to be in, because on one hand I can see why you would want to have it, but I also personally strongly oppose, because I kind of like freedom, but again, I'm not the one that has to make that decision. But when you're talking about the different examples of guidelines for the second story, it's not like, in a bit, to back to referencing Newport, they all look the same. All the houses look the same. There is, you know, might be different color or rock placed differently, but that wouldn't happen here, would it? Like with your examples about if you're building the second story.
No, this is only dealing with setbacks.
Well, but I thought
the answer to your question, the council can do what they want to do. I mean, that's the bottom line. The council can set parameters and say, these are the guidelines, they're all going to look this way. I mean, that's within the parameters of what they're empowered to do.
That's not what this is, right?
All
that's
this...
not what this is, but that was an attempt to try and present something here. My only concern, too, and I would offer this, if you want us to do a whole lot more work, we don't have full council direction. I don't have a lot of resources. He costs money. So I'm kind of at a point where do you want us to draw the line? What more do you want us, how much more do you want us to go or engage or, you know, saying is I'm kind of, and I don't want to, obviously we want to meet your demands and requests, but yeah. I think I want to do is make sure that we're doing it.
I think another meeting would be in order as far as additional research beyond what, and I don't want to speak for the chair, but any additional cities, I'm not sure that that's necessarily warranted unless from a public policy or public administration or planning perspective, you feel that it would be good practice to go beyond what you've already done. Okay. But again, that's why we rely upon staff to make that call. We as policymakers aren't going to tell them necessarily you have to do X, Y, or Z, and I think we'd be somewhat overstepping and going beyond.
But I know myself, I'd like to, I'm more visual and I'd like to see visually, you know, how does this look? You know, what's our current situation? What would it look like if we?
We can make that happen.
Okay. But Howard,
I just want to go on record saying I think you guys are considering doing something that's very sensible and you're going down the right path.
Thank
notwithstanding
you.
The language came from the floor. my thought was, I had two questions: who's going to enforce it? And two, what are you going to do to make sure that there's a broad base of public understanding as to what this new direction is?
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next agenda item.
So next item is item I, development standards for the E4 and R1 zones. And again, this is a continued discussion. You've got basically two matrices, and I really do apologize because it's my area. I didn't catch that the red didn't come through on the copying. But the one that has more columns in the matrix, basically, if you have that one, that's the one where the changes would be. The current one, the one that has fewer columns, is just how things are as they exist right now. So you could see what we did is we kind of tried to put something where you could compare this is that to that. Does that make sense? Probably not. But.
And that's the intent behind giving you the existing code for the residential zones. And then what's being proposed as an amendment to those development standards. The whole idea behind this is to so right now we have just development standards for E4, and then we have development standards for just R1.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really that you have properties that are E4 that are like 20,000 plus, and it was about a year or so ago where council directed staff to identify E4 properties that are legal but not non-conforming, which means they're less than 20,000 square feet. And so the council's directive at the time was to address properties that were 17,000 square feet on
and larger,
right? And then we would defer how we would be able to handle the development standards for properties that are less than 17,000 square feet. Yeah, because we do have, it's what's unique about the city I've learned over the last 2 years of being here is that it's the development standard doesn't fit all, because it's every property is different. And so that was the void, that was one void where there wasn't really any development standards for properties, E4 zone properties that were 17,000 square feet.
And or less.
Or less. So that's what's being introduced here on the second column.
So the issue with the fact that we didn't have any special standards for properties that were zoned E4 that were less than 17,000 square feet, mm-hmm. is that they had to live with the setback requirements
right.
for as if they were 20,000 square feet or larger. So let's say we've got for example some E4 lots that are maybe 11,000 or 12,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And so that really constrains what they can do on their property.
Yeah, it's pretty restrictive. And so
yeah, so what we're looking at is how can we relax things a bit so that they can develop their, if you know, in the future develop their properties without having to come and get a variance,
right.
Which is time consuming and expensive. Because what's the cost for a variance request?
$3,000 and change.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, let's just deal with it now and see if we can provide some flexibility for those owners of those smaller E4 properties so that they can more expeditiously develop their properties.
And if you recall from earlier conversations that we've had, what we're trying to do is strike a balance where we have the lot size and the development potential for the lot to be proportional.
Right.
You don't want, we could use the city of Newport Beach again, where there was a time where they had issues with mansionization, where they were basically building on almost 100% of their lot area, and it was negatively impacting property values and that sort of thing. So what we're trying to do here is be sensitive to that and create development standards where the size of the home is proportional to the size of the lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only did we do that for the E4 zone, but we also have done it for the R1 zone, because there are R1 zone properties in the city that are 17,000 square feet. And the R1 zoning development standards are less restrictive. For instance, in the R1 zone, the side yard setback is 5 feet. Compared to minimum 10 feet for E4. So we've adjusted the development standards such that it would be equitable for property owners that wanted to do room additions or a brand new resident.
Yeah. So basically what this does is relax, it provides for more, for as in future development or future remodels or whatever, that we provide guidance for more proportional development.
Correct.
And provides a lot more flexibility for people with E4, smaller E4 zoned lots, and also protects adjacent property owners in R1 lots that where there's a very large lot which would potentially allow for a very large structure to be only 5 feet with only a 5 foot side yard setback.
Right. Those and large lots that are zoned R1, if they were to use the R1 development standard, you could yield a home that would be out of scale in character with the rest of the subdivision.
You could end up with a McMansion problem.
Correct.
Yeah. And so we want to avoid McMansions, but on the other hand, we want to provide flexibility and proportionality.
Correct.
Okay. And what you've proposed is to strike that balance.
Well, we have it in this matrix. Mm-hmm. We've included a couple of new columns in there to address, and I'll just go over it real quickly. R1 zones, and this would be added in the development standards so that we can identify specifically the development standards for certain size lots. If you're looking at the ones to the furthest to the right, R1 zone, 8,000 square feet to 13,500 square feet. You have development standards. You got that?
Okay.
And then the second column from the right, you have R1 zones, 13,500 square feet up to 16,999 square feet. So that would be another set of development standards. They don't change very much, but proportionally adjustments have been made. And then we have E4 zones that are less than 16,000 square feet, because those properties do exist. They're not all 20,000 square feet, as we've discovered. And then we have E4 and R1 zones that are 17,000 square feet, upwards to beyond that, that would have its own set of development standards. And again, the objective of this whole exercise is to yield a development on a lot, a home that's proportional to the size of the lot. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we're able to accomplish that with this set of development standards.
Okay.
So again, the process would be this committee, then the full council under public hearing would have to address this. Is that correct?
Yeah, if this committee so chooses, then this would go to a full city council for their consideration as a code amendment.
Okay. So staff's recommendation is?
Well, we think you deal with the problem this way, mm-hmm. so we've given you our best estimate of how to deal with it, but
okay.
It's now sort of a policy call. Do you want to deal with it or do you not want to deal with it this way? So
the only question I have is, do you think that this is inextricably linked with the prior item that we're dealing with? There is some spillover, but I see this kind of standing on its own.
It could stand on its own, or it could go concurrently with this. But it sounds like there needs to be more discussion about the previous item, bringing graphics to show not only this committee, but also the public, so that they have a better understanding and they can get their arms around what we're trying to accomplish here. Mm-hmm. So the other thing, too, and it's a policy decision, whether to make these design guidelines I'm speaking about, the previous item, whether to make it policy or set of guidelines or codify it as part of the code. Mm-hmm. So that's a policy decision.
I yield to your leadership on this.
Okay. I think the item that we've just discussed on the setback requirements for the smaller E4 zones and the larger R1 properties, I think what you've provided is consistent with the direction that we've provided in several previous meetings. And I think it addresses issues that we've experienced in the city. So I think we should go ahead and go forward with this to council with a recommendation. So we'll do that. And thank you for your good work on this.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you for your direction.
We addressed E4 zones larger than 17,000 square feet, probably a year and a half or 2 years ago, and we've been kicking the can down the road on this for that long. So I'm glad we're finally moving forward on this.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Chair. So a lot of these are just small changes to what's existing, correct?
Yeah.
And then you've divvied it up the different lot sizes for technicalities, right?
Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah. I mean, I think listening up and having it done at the counter is the best way.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. So, update, next item is item J, update on significant development projects.
We've got two and a half pages of, as of September 28th, so it's very current, the building safety highlights significant construction projects. Bill Terran has prepared this, shares it monthly. The one I would draw to your attention is Mendocino. And we have, that project has been going on for a number of years. And we, Bill Terran and I are both dealing with it. And we may be approaching the council about an alternate way of dealing with it because we're getting non-responsive movement. So I think we are sort of approaching it with our city attorney about what options do we have. And we probably will come forward on that, because I think it's just, we're not getting anywhere and it needs to be done. We need to have some progress made on it.
What's left to do on that project in general terms?
It's 20% of it inside and out. It's not inhabitable. He's not living there.
So 20% has been remodeled, or there's 20% left?
20% left to do.
Inside and out.
Inside and out.
Okay.
And it needs to be done. It's, you know, we kind of said get the front yard done and not get right. this done and not. So we're not, I think we want to approach it maybe a different way, but I don't want to speak out of turn until I have the city attorney agree that it's an appropriate way that we want to proceed. So Bill Terra and I talked about it at length this morning. We've talked to the landowner, and we may have to just go another direction.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point you got to finish these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
The owner is living in a hotel somewhere in Anaheim.
Okay.
Is there a time limit on the permit on this one? Is it grandfathered in or something? Or? I forget. It's been going on for a long time.
It's been going on for about 3 to 4 years, I want to say. And that's sort of the problem. Is we can pull the permit, and then you